FMR 101.3 FM. People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, you might have seen the publicity that on the 18th of October, running until the 3rd of November, David Cramer's musical Orpheus McAdoo is being put on here at Artscape in the theatre. And I wonder if you remember, in 2015, this musical, Orpheus McAdoo, premiered at the Fugard Theatre. Well, David Cramer is with me in the studio to talk about venturing onto the opera stage. David, welcome.
Thank you, Rodney. Very nice to be here again.
I was right, wasn't it? 2015, that McAdoo opened at
That's right, at the Fugard Theatre. It was called Orpheus in Africa then, and it's now called Orpheus McAdoo because I've made some substantial changes to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the same story.
Okay. Yes, I was wondering, moving to the opera, it's not an opera fundamentally, is it? It's a musical still.
It's a musical.
But you've reworked it a bit for the... How does it work? You're working with Cape Town opera singers, aren't you?
Yes, so it's a combination of musical performers and members of the opera company. So we have Conroy Scott and Brittany Smith.
Yes,
playing
star
the lead,
names.
Playing the lead roles.
Who, oh, is Conrad playing Orpheus?
Yes, he will play Orpheus.
Uh-huh.
And Brittany plays Matty Allen, who becomes his wife.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, and there are others as well. What's exciting for me is that the choir will be made up mainly of opera-trained singers. And so that to get those voices sounding like they would have sounded 130 years ago,
yes,
is an exciting aspect of
for
the
you,
show.
It must be no wonder. So did you do much reworking, or how did you rework it?
The story is very much the same, but I made changes, particularly in the character of Matty Allen, who's Orpheus's wife. I found her a little bit bland in the first version. You see, I think what I did was I stuck to the historical facts mm-hmm. when I first wrote it. I mean, everything was factual, and I didn't take dramatic license. So this time around, I thought, let me give Matty a little bit more of a colorful background. And so she comes out of vaudeville. She's a vaudeville dancer, and she gets to become part of the McAdoo choir that visits South Africa. And then they fall in love, get married, and she has quite a big influence on him.
Mm-hmm.
But she, you know, he's quite, let's say, serious sort of personality,
yes.
And she brings a whole lot more vivaciousness and life to their relationship.
Gosh, you've chosen the ideal people, vivacious for Brittany, and a sort of stentorian seriousness of Conroy.
Yes.
You've got the two ideal actors there.
And such powerful voices.
Mm.
So that's really what's quite wonderful now for me to be working on this with these fabulous singers, both operatic and musical singers. We have people like Alexis Peterson, who was in A Danger in the Dark with me, and we have Eldon van der Merwe, who also was in Danger in the Dark and was recently in this Room musical. It's good.
I noticed from the cast list that you have got some of the people that I saw, like Dean Bailey, for example.
Yes, Dean. Yeah, Dean Bailey. He's just been in my Kitty musical,
yes, Fair and the
Very
right.
Kitty.
That's right.
A very versatile performer.
He is.
A fantastic actor and singer. And he was in the first one as well. He played one of the comedians,
uh-huh.
and he's going to be joined by Jodie Abrams this time, who was the star of Cutting the Kings, Laurence Olivier Award-winning actor.
Oh, he did, that's right. Mm. Goodness me. But it must be, is it the first time you've worked with the opera company?
Yes, very first time.
How did it come about? Did they ask you? Did you ask them? How did it all come about?
Well, I went to see an opera at Theatre on the Bay and sat next to Alex Gabriel. And we were chatting, and can't quite remember how it came about, but I sort of said, you know, wouldn't it be love? Oh, I think I said, I see you doing, you know, Sound of Music. And it'd be quite nice to do a South African musical. And I just happened to have one here, you
in
know,
your back
in my back pocket. And so we started talking. And I met Magdalie and Mina, and we went for breakfast. They got excited by the idea of, you know, of creating and presenting an original South African musical that suits their company. And let's see where it goes from here.
I think it's a brilliant idea, because I remember when I did see it back in 2015, thinking that, in fact, although it was a musical, it had a kind of operatic feel with a big chorus.
Mm.
It's really a sort of earthy piece.
Yes, and
well,
this time, again, an aspect I didn't do in the first version was that Orpheus was an aspirant opera singer himself. You know, he fancied himself as an opera singer and wanted, in fact, to open an opera school one day. But he decides that his wife, Mattie, has this beautiful voice and that he could train her to be an opera singer. So they sing an extract from Verdi's The Brindisi.
Yes, the drinking song from Traviata.
So we do that on stage as if, you know, it's a selection from the concert, and that's new.
Okay, so that we didn't see the first time.
No,
around. Okay, that's
very much you know, little few minutes of proper opera singing.
Mm-hmm. And both those singers I've said before have just done wonderful things. Brittany's done Lucia de Lammermoor. She did The Sound of Music. She's in My Fair Lady. And Conroy was the big sort of Tosca man.
Yes.
A Scarpia. So real big operatic voices combined, as you say.
No, I can't wait. In fact, I'm in rehearsals at the moment. I'm starting to hear the songs being under the direction of Kevin Kroc. And I can't wait to hear. There are two big numbers that I've written for Orpheus, which Conroy will sing. The one is, you know, Father Was a Slave, and the other one is the Mirror Song, where, you know, he looks into the mirror and he thinks about all the insults that he's been receiving. And it's very powerful. And, you know, when you have a big voice like that to it.
And he's got a rich baritone, hasn't he? David, let's have a piece of music. What are you going to share with us today?
I'd like to start with an old recording, very old recording of Jubilee singing. This is what the choir would, you know, not. It's the earliest, one of the earliest recordings.
It's called I'm Rolling, is that right?
Yes, I think so.
I'm the rolling, I'm the rolling, I'm the rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm the rolling, I'm the rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm the rolling, I'm the rolling, I'm the rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling through an unfriendly world. Oh, brothers, won't you help me? Oh, brothers, won't you help me to pray? Oh, brothers, won't you help me? Won't you help me in the service of the Lord? I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling through an unfriendly world. Oh, sisters, won't you help me? Oh, sisters, won't you help me to pray? Oh, sisters, won't you help me? Won't you help me in the service of the Lord? I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling through an unfriendly world. I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling, I'm a rolling.
That's the Jubilee Singers and a piece called I'm Rolling. And my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio is David Cramer. And his musical Orpheus McAdoo is about to open here in Cape Town, in fact, on the 18th of October. And it's a musical which I saw back in 2015 in its first run at the Fugard Theatre. And now it's on the opera stage, but it's still a musical. Remember that. And David, as you hear, has the luxury of working with some opera singers like Brittany Smith and Conroy Scott. But I want to find out, David, it's an interesting story about how you came to write this musical. Just tell me a little bit about the background of McAdoo and his Jubilee Singers and all the rest of it.
Yes, well, quite a number of years ago, I came across a photograph of a choir, an African-American choir, all dressed up in Victorian clothing, top hats and tailcoats and looking very fancy and smart. And I thought, and it said, visited Cape Town in 1890. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. Never heard about this. They were called the Virginia Jubilee Singers and Concert Company. And so I started to research that and discovered that there was this fascinating story about Orpheus, who was the son of slaves and then was educated after the war, the Civil War, and became a teacher, but discovered he had more of a bent for singing and entertainment, and decided to start his own choir and to travel the world, because in those days, black entertainers were finding more opportunities outside of America rather than inside.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And we're talking about the late 1800s, mid-1800s.
Late 1800s,
right.
So they go to Glasgow to start. They don't do very well. And he happens to have met Lady Loch, who's the wife of Sir Henry Loch, who becomes the High Commissioner of the Cape Colony. And she says, why don't you come to South Africa? And so they sail down to South Africa, Landia, in 1890, and put on a concert in Harrington Street, actually, just up the road.
Just around the corner from the City Hall.
Yes, actually. And and it's a huge success. People are, you know, absolutely so amazed by the sound of these singers, and it's you know, they've almost their previous experience had been blackface minstrelsy, and now suddenly here were these, you know, African American choir,
the real thing,
yeah, who sang these beautiful spiritual songs.
Yeah.
So they got great reviews and they did very, very well in Cape Town. And to such a point that they decided to go on tour through South Africa. And they stayed here for 2 years.
Wow.
Before going across to Australia and spending another 2.5 years in Australia, then returning to South Africa in 1895 for another 2.5 years. But the second time they came back, he started to run into problems, which were largely due to the fact that Jubilee singing had gone out of fashion.
What is Jubilee singing?
Well, it's, if you think of the spirituals, like a choir singing songs like Amazing Grace,
okay,
or Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Yes.
They, you know, no accompaniment. Just very, very strong, pure voices in those harmonies.
Wonderful harmonies that choirs can produce on there as well.
So he had a large impact in South Africa. You know, he would have influenced the Iskatimiya singing when they went into Natal. Solomon Linda, who, you know, he was a young man at that time, and he heard them sing. He was influenced by them. I think even the Malay choirs took some of the performance aspects of the Jubilee Singers.
Did McAdoo himself then, did they never go back to America?
He went back to America once, but the actual choir never went back.
Oh, okay.
They were stayed on tour for at least 10 years. Yeah, amazing. And he died in Australia at the age of 42.
Oh, that's relatively young.
So he came here, he was 32 years old,
mm-hmm.
And then he had, you know, between Africa, South Africa and Australia. And, then unfortunately had a heart problem and died in Australia, where he's buried. He became a citizen of Australia.
It is a fascinating story. But now, so you did all this research and read all about him.
Yes.
How did you come about writing this piece, Orpheus McAdoo? And is it your original music?
Well, it's a mixture of the old songs, the traditional Jubilee songs, and there's some... look, I have a comedic aspect as well, where there are two comedians that sort of play the minstrel side of the show. So there are some older minstrel songs, but most of the songs are original David Cromer songs that I wrote for the characters and for the musical.
Gee whiz, but was it a joy to write?
Absolute, beautiful.
You were obviously very inspired by the story of Orpheus McAdoo.
Very, very inspired, yes. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe we could listen to one of the songs.
I think so. Well, one of the ones you've chosen for your next piece, in fact, is called Going Home.
Yes.
Is that one you wrote?
I wrote the song, and the song is sung by Linnell Kennard from the first production, and it's sung on board ship when they are traveling down to South Africa, and the ship is just coming round where the Ivory Coast, around that point.
Yes, yes.
And she's very excited to be going back to where her people have come from.
The sky is black as coal. Diamond stars are shining bright. We are sailing home to Africa, sailing home into the night. I'm going home, home to Africa. From the Ivory Coast, blow so gently across the sea. Is that you I hear, Mama Africa, calling out to me?
Let's not forget, things might not have changed since we were taken from the coast as slaves. We may be free now to come and go. What awaits us there, I'm not sure that I know.
Africa, will you remember your wretched children from long ago? Will you remember we were taken from you across the ocean to be sold?
That piece called Going Home, from the musical Orpheus McAdoo, written by my guest today, David Cromer, and sung by Linnell Kennard. What a lovely voice and what a lovely person she is, Dave.
Beautiful.
So we're talking about Orpheus McAdoo, which is going to be on here at Artscape in a theater from the 18th of October for quite a long run to the 3rd of November. And what sort of size cast is it? I seem to remember quite a big cast.
Yes, it's. I mean, for us, it's quite a big cast. Musicals have become very small because of the, you know, the costs involved and so on. I think we are a cast of 17.
That is
without
quite big,
the musicians, 17 singer actors on stage, and then there's a small accompaniment of four musicians.
Okay. Are the musicians live in the show?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that adds an extra touch, doesn't it?
Yes, it's lovely.
If it's not sort of canned.
Yeah, lovely. And under the musical direction of Kevin Kroc. Mm-hmm. So he's on the piano, and we have a cello and a violin, and then keyboards that do, you know, extra strings.
Extra sounds and
extra
things.
Extra strings and things.
Sort of computerized. There's another word.
Well, you know, like sometimes you need a bit of bass.
That's right.
And that,
that's right.
It gets added.
Fills out the sound.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that it's coming off.
And David, are you directing this production?
I'm directing it, yes.
Okay. So it must be, as you said, you've had to rework parts of it. It must be a bit of a challenge to see your baby, Orpheus Magno, the musical you wrote, being brought back to life on an opera stage. And challenging, I should think.
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you see your ideas come onto stage, as I did 10 years ago at the Fugard, then you see what really works well, and of course you see the flaws, and you think, I wish I had a chance to, you know, to fix that and to fix that. So I was very happy with it, but I was always hoping that I would get another opportunity to revisit it and rewrite some of the things that I wanted to change. And so it was it's just a great opportunity, because when you're developing an original musical, a new musical, you know, we just don't have those sort of things that, say, the Americans do. They do workshops, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll have a summer workshop on it, and they'll find out these kind of problems. Then the next summer they'll do another one before they even take it into a rehearsal room.
Yes, gosh.
And we just have to, like, write it, rehearse it, and put it on the stage, you know. And so now this gives me another chance. And very exciting to do it. I love the challenge. I love the challenge of directing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that I wrote it and I'm directing it, I suppose I have a particular vision of this. And
of course.
Know,
no, it's ideal
whereas,
that you're
whereas
directing.
Another director, you know, would do it somewhat differently,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And are you a tough director?
I like to – I certainly don't direct in a way that I tell the actors what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to get them to participate.
In the process, in the sort
process
of creative process.
Yeah, you know, it's actors will tell you that's what I do. It's collaboration.
Okay.
Collaboration, and then I make the final decisions. You know, they might have, look, you know, when there's more than one head, you get some better ideas. I don't always have the best ideas. And the actors, like, you know, like you were talking about Dean Barley.
Yes.
He's very inventive and will come up with things that I wouldn't have thought of. And, that's great. I love that. Let's keep that in. So we work like that.
That's a lovely way, actually, of working. I bet you get the best out of the actors. Was there a long audition process? Or were you able to rely on the people you've already used?
Well, in this case, I had to audition the opera company members.
Yes.
Just to be sure that they would work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was very happy with all of them. And then the others, the musical performers who are acting and singing, are all people that I've worked with before,
okay.
like Jodie Abrams, Dean Barley, Alexis Peterson, Edith Plaikis, and Eldon van der Merwe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and even Elton Landru, who isn't singing but is a great actor.
Okay, so you knew you had a good company who knew you and knew what you wanted from them.
Yes, I didn't have to go on a long search for anyone. I could just really choose the people I wanted.
David, how would you describe the music of Orpheus Magno? We heard Going Home just now. But there are various, it's various styles, aren't there? You've got jazz, you've got even a bit of ragtime, apparently.
Yeah. So the major influences that I showcase, firstly, is the choral jubilee singing. And I wanted to replicate that as closely as I could. Mm-hmm. That's the one aspect of it. And so Jubilees are spirituals. And then there is the sort of early minstrel kind of banjo music and early American folk music that I used as inspiration. What happens at the end of this period in the 1890s, towards the end of the 1890s, ragtime starts to make an appearance. And ragtime, it becomes quite a big influence on Orpheus's reinvention of himself. So one of the characters, his name's Ernest Logan, is actually based on a minstrel performer who was a very successful ragtime artist. So I had a lot of fun introducing ragtime into this musical. Mm-hmm. And again, this is one of the things that's new in Orpheus McAdoo, is that I've written a ragtime song for them to sing and play. Ragtime is a big one.
Is that what we're going to hear now, Black yes. and White Rag?
No, that's not my song, but there's just an illustration of the kind of what ragtime music sounded like.
There's some ragtime music for you. That's called the Black and White Rag. It was another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, David Cromer, and we're talking about Orpheus McAdoo. And you say, David, that that was something of an inspiration for you to write your own ragtime piece for the show.
Yes, because in my new version of of Orpheus McAdoo, ragtime plays a more important part in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because, you know, he reinvents himself and moves from being, you know, an impresario who presents a rather serious Jubilee choir to something much more entertaining and lively and frivolous. And it's when he hears ragtime that he suddenly sort of sees where the future lies.
Yeah. But as we were saying, David, during that music, the ragtime movement was earlier than I think people realize. It was very early in the century, wasn't it?
Yes, it starts in the late 1890s.
Yeah.
The first ragtime starts to be heard in St. Louis in America, and only really becomes famous. And when we think of ragtime, we think of Scott Joplin.
Yes, indeed.
And he is early 1900s. So he comes almost 10 years later,
right,
and starts to write very popular ragtime tunes.
I'm going to ask you a tricky question now. How would you describe ragtime? I know you said frivolous and joyful and happy.
Yeah. Well, you see, up until that point, the singing is very on the beat.
Yeah.
And what ragtime does is a syncopated music. So the melody falls sort of offbeat,
mm-hmm,
between the beats. So what you have with ragtime is a left hand in the bass that you sort of doom dum, you know, very straightforward, two-four time. And then on top of that, you have the right hand, you know, really kind of dancing in between that rhythm.
So if I go dum 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 dum,
so it's incubated.
It's incubated.
Falls in between the beat.
Now I know, after our little demonstration. I just want to move briefly away from Orpheus to find out a bit more, because you really have had quite an extraordinary career, haven't you? I mean, you started really quite young and got into music quite quickly in your life, didn't you, if I've read your biography correctly?
Yes. I've been writing songs since the 1970s,
uh-huh,
and I recorded my first album in my late 20s, and I was very you know, lucky to have a big hit song, and you know, it changed my life.
Yeah,
yeah. So I was writing and performing since the 1970s.
So you've never done anything else. Music has always been your life.
Well, I did a little bit of textile designing before I started, but let's not go back there.
Okay. And you have also always had this knack of combining Afrikaans and English styles,
mm-hmm,
together in your songs and in your lyrics.
Yes.
Which I think is unique and also must be a bit of a challenge to get it just right, as you succeeded in doing.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, in those years, the SABC was very strict about language.
You certainly
couldn't, you know, they expected you to speak very Rona Moinki Afrikaans.
Yeah.
And they didn't like you to mix or play, as they said to me, David, jy mors met ons taal. But I was the first person to get a record played on SABC that had English and Afrikaans in it.
The same song?
Yeah, that was Hakon Blokkies, which was the description of the old rugby player. So the verses were in English and the choruses were in Afrikaans. So that was quite a breakthrough.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, and people wouldn't know how difficult it was then to get your music played on the radio. You, mm-hmm, know, it didn't sound like something they wanted you to.
Thank goodness those days are over.
Mm.
But you had a number of hits, didn't you, when you were quite young?
Yes.
And became famous. And also, you were very drawn to the oppressed, weren't you? And I think this is why, is it why you had a particular interest in the colored community in Cape?
Yes. You know, look, I suppose I went to Leeds University in my early 20s, and, you know, I was exposed to the politics of very left-wing politics at Leeds, mm-hmm, University, and having come straight out of apartheid South Africa, you know, my eyes were really open to what was going on. And so I felt I wanted to, within my writing, subtly say something about the social conditions. And it led me to wanting to write about District 6. And it was, you know, I wanted to write a musical. And that's when I met Tully Peterson, and we discovered that we were very good, you know, partners in terms of writing musicals. And he had lived in District 6, and, you know, and he was looking for someone who could write the story and write the lyrics. And so, yeah, that all worked out very well. But it was about championing the underdog, and also stories that had become suppressed. So, but 20 years after the declaration of District 6, we started to write that musical, and it had almost become a forgotten issue, mm-hmm. and the musical revived.
Absolutely.
Revived it.
I mean, would you say that that was one of your big hits? District 6 was a huge hit for you.
It was a huge hit. I would say it changed the face of Cape Town theater.
Mm. It definitely did.
You know, before that, it was very much a sort of white elitist. Even at the Baxter, mm-hmm. it was mainly white people that came there. And then when District 6 arrived, that completely flipped, you know, and hasn't been the same since.
Where was it premiered in Cape Town?
At the Baxter Theatre.
What's the Baxter?
Baxter in 1987.
Wow, good heavens. And it's had many, many revivals, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been very successful. But not as successful as our biggest hit, which was Cutting the Kings.
Oh, was that, you say, more successful?
Well, because it was internationally successful.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, in South Africa, I suppose District 6 is the one that people would think of as our biggest mm-hmm. hit. But they wouldn't have seen the success of Cutting the Kings that went to London and won the Laurence Olivier Award. And then also went to Broadway, played Broadway for 6 months. And then almost, you know, so many countries in Europe.
And like, more so than District 6, Cutting Kings.
It's also, it's a District 6 story.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's a story set in District 6, but much, you know, rock and roll, mm-hmm. much more. It's not a political story in that way.
Right. Whereas District 6 was very political.
Yes, it was
I remember seeing it at the Market Theatre in Johannesburg and really not knowing Cape Town that well in those days and being quite astonished by what I was seeing and hearing was amazing. I want to talk about another one of your little famous things in a moment. But first of all, I see you've got the Battle Hymn here, the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And why have you chosen that?
Yes, well, so the Battle Hymn of the Republic, again, comes out of the time of the Civil War, and we perform it in the musical Orpheus McAdoo, but I use it to illustrate how it goes from a very sort of strict rhythm song in the early part of the musical to putting it in right at the end where it becomes part of the celebration, and it's very rhythmic. And this is Whitney Houston singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And again, I've used her very much as an inspiration for Matty Allen, who will sing this at the end.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage weather grapes of wrath or storm. He has loosed his faithful lightning of his terrible whistle. His truth is marching on. Everybody sing with me. Glory, hallelujah.
Whitney Houston and her version of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. As you said, David, more rhythmic than what one's used to. Is that more or less how it sounds on the show?
I've used that as an inspiration, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know, we were talking about some other things that you've done and about District 6 and Cut and Kings. Mm. But I think a lot of people will recognize you or remember you from your famous Volkswagen ad.
The Foxy bus, chasing after it with my bicycle.
Yes.
Yeah, my red shoes.
Red Felskun.
Yeah, right, Felskuns, yeah.
When was that done?
That was in the 80s.
83,
I had a long run from 83 with the Volkswagen ads. I made quite a few of them.
Different ones.
Different ones. You know, they made an ad and then they would show it sporadically over a two-year period and then make another ad. And, you know, it went on for about 13 years.
Was it fun?
Oh, it was great fun. I loved it. Yeah, a lot of fun. You know, they gave me a Foxy bus.
And oh,
every time the new thing came out, there was a four-wheel drive bus, I got one, you know.
Oh, excellent.
And I got paid handsomely, and it was very nice.
But you, you've always been, seem to be very fit, the way you dance around, and that must have taken it out of you.
Yes.
The number of takes and all that to get that right.
Yes, but nothing like performing on stage.
That's interesting.
I really threw myself into performing. Yeah.
Is that?
I find making the ads and making films, you sit around waiting.
Stop,
you know,
start.
It's kind of like being in an airport lounge, you know, waiting to take off.
One of the other things we were talking just now about District 6 and your really hugely successful association with Telly Peterson.
Yes.
And I was surprised to see that you met him here in Cape Town with Des and Dawn Lindbergh.
Yes, I was a young aspirant folk singer, songwriter, and so I got invited to perform at a folk concert at UCT, and on that lineup was Des and Dawn, and they had brought along their protege, who was Tully Peterson, and I met him in the dressing room. And Blundell? Blundell was another.
Keith Blundell.
Keith Blundell was another folk on that concert. Anyway, so my songs already were sort of infused with politics and satire, and Talib was singing kind of Jose Feliciano. You know, had a beautiful voice, a really beautiful singer, and could play the guitar very well. And so I said to him in the dressing room, I said, Talib, you know, you're so good, but you should write your own songs. And he turned around and said, if I was to sing what you sing, they'd lock me up.
Oh, did he really?
Yes. And he probably was right, you know. Mm. I was getting away with stuff, I suppose, because of, you know, my privilege.
Yeah.
But anyway, we ended up, that was in about 1977. Mm-hmm. And then, I kept in touch with him. And then 9 years later, started thinking about writing this musical about District 6 and bumped into him. And I said, you know, I really need to work with somebody who comes from there and knows that, and you would be the ideal guy. He said, I want to write a musical. I've just come back from London, and that's exactly what I want to do.
Perfect timing.
He loved musicals, and he had a beautiful melodic way of writing.
Uh-huh. And a tragic end.
A tragedy.
Which we won't speak about. What was the last thing you worked with him on?
It's Guma, a musical called Guma. So we wrote six musicals together. We went to London in that year. We'd had a lot of success here with Guma in South Africa, which also tells the history of slavery.
Oh,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so there's another suppressed history theme. And so we opened at the Tricycle Theatre on the Wednesday night, and he flew home on the Thursday, and then was murdered on the Saturday.
Oh, as quickly as that, yeah. After your...
So I just said goodbye to him at the theatre, opening night.
Mm-hmm.
And next I heard a few days later.
Gosh, that must have come as a terrible blow to you.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that, because I know it must have been incredibly painful.
Yeah, you know, he's with me every day.
Mm-hmm. David, we're approaching the end of our program,
mm-hmm.
and it's been fascinating. I'm now so looking forward to seeing Orpheus McAdoo here at the Artscape Theatre, mm-hmm. complete with an opera chorus and some opera singers, but a musical nonetheless. And let me remind you that it opens on the 18th of October here at Artscape and runs till the 3rd of November, so there's plenty of time to see it.
Mm, and the ticket prices are really good. You know, they range from 200 Rand. 200 Rand to... think top price is 450. I mean, for a big company like this, full-on musical, that's
absolutely.
It's incredible.
No, we are lucky here to get such
quality. You'd be paying thousands of rand anywhere else.
Okay, so that's something to look forward to. And thanks, David, for sharing some memories with us as well. And now we're going out with a piece called Deep River.
Yes.
What is the significance of this?
Well, this is Paul Robeson singing Deep River, which is a spiritual, but a solo singer as opposed to the choir. And again, I listened to this for inspiration on some of those solo numbers that Orpheus would sing.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave me the sound and the sort of chord modulations that are, you know, you need to have to make it sound like that time.
The original, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Do you work at home mostly? Have you got a studio? When you're working and studying and composing?
Yes, I have a lovely little room that I've built myself amongst the milkwood trees at the bottom of my garden. So I'm surrounded by trees and this lovely old hut that I've built out of the floorboards from the old Fugard Theatre stage.
Good grief. Yeah. That's a lovely story as well. You're like Mahler, Gustav Mahler had a little composing hut at the bottom of a garden. David Crum, it's been great talking to you. We'll play out, as I say, with Deep River. And I look forward to what you've got up your sleeve next, because I'm sure you've got something.
I am thinking about something, but I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. David, thanks. All the best.
Thank you, Rodney.
Deep River, Lord.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
FMR 101.3 FM.